Welcome to New Books in Israel Studies. I'm Yaakov Yadgar, the host of the channel, and today we're talking to Michal Kravel-Tovi about her new book, When the State Winks, The Performance of Jewish Conversion in Israel. The book offers an intimate, insightful ethnography of the current field of Jewish conversion in Israel. It highlights the complex and often conflicted nature of an intimate, individual religious performance that is at once and the same time also one of the most pressing political issues in contemporary political or Israeli sociopolitics, I'm sorry. Professor Kravel-Tovi, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Let us begin with the general context of your ethnographic work. Can you give us, the listener, a general view of the field of Jewish conversion of Israel? Who are the players? What are the main premises of the field? And why is it of such an importance in the first place?
Do you mean the socio-historical context that embeds my study, or the theoretical literature that?
No, I guess the historical and political context of the field would be of high relevance to our listeners.
So you mentioned in your introduction that this is a very pressing political issue. It has always been so, but more symbolically than demographically or in concrete ways. It has always been, you know, a symbolic issue, because to become Jewish in the Jewish state means that someone has to regulate the boundaries. Someone, and this someone is usually a religious bureaucrat or a politician, and eventually the state needs to regulate the boundaries. And it's really heavy issues, you know, entailed in this kind of decision. Who is a Jew? Who is entitled to be recognized by the state as a Jew? Who is entitled to get married and receive religious services as a Jew? And yet, it hasn't been a pressing issue until the late 1980s, when an influx of immigrants, a third of which about are not recognized as Jews according to the matrilineal principle of Jewish religion. They have not been recognized as Jews, which means that they have entered Israel under the auspice of the law of return. They have become citizens, but they cannot be regarded as Jews by the state's own establishment, religious establishment, which means that they have become sort of non-Jews Jews. They cannot get married with any fellow citizen, Israeli Jewish citizen. They do serve in the army. They do, you know, take part in the economy. They do consider themselves patriots. They do participate in political games in the political field, but many of whom are not recognized as Jews. So this has become pressing because these people are coming here. They want to, you know, have families. They want to have their own rights. They want to feel that Israel treats them as full citizens and not as second-class citizens. And they can get married with fellow Jews, which means that inside Israel, there is a new phenomenon, as some would see as a threat, of intermarriage. Right, it's within the community, within Israel, within the nation state. It's not a diasporic community, and yet this is regarded from religious point of view as intermarriage. As this became real pressing issues for rabbis, in 2003, Ariel Sharon decided to make it into a national mission, which means a high priority initiative that the state takes upon itself in terms of resources, manpower, agenda, of making as many converts as possible from within this cohort of population, which in fact with more a priority to younger women. And it makes sense why, right? Like based on what I just said, that women define the Jewish identity of. So this is the general context that brings into play some of the contradictions at the macro-social level that I'm working with.
Yeah, so I think listeners or readers of your book who are not familiar with the Israeli political culture might wonder from the start, what does religious conversion have to do with the supposedly secular field of politics of the state in the first place? Just to take issue with what you presented earlier, there's a litany of civil issues with the immigrants from the former Soviet Union, which could be solved civilly or secularly and not through the religious apparatus, not through religious conversion. For example, the state might be forced to allow for a kind of civil marriages so as to allow Jews to marry non-Jews. And as you said, it's a problem from the Orthodox point of view, but the mission has been described as a national mission. The government is playing a central role in it. This, can you maybe say a couple of words of this conflation of what in a Western liberal democratic mindset would seem to be a confusion of the fields of the religious private lives of individuals and the state's secular politics?
Sure, sure. So Israel is, I think, unique, and yet it's not fully exceptional. For example, there are other states, secular states, where religion and politics or religion and national identity conflates in ways that bears on conversion, like India, of course, Indonesia. I list several states in my work that they have similar contradictions or similar conflations. Religion is, in most nation states, is not only disaggregate or isolated category. It usually comes together with a sense of an ethnic or an ethno-national identity. So conversion, in a way, tries to either circumvent or to repair those lines that do not align, that do not go together. Because states do assume a sort of cohorts of national identity and of religion go hand in hand. So conversion does play into these two fields of both religion and politics. And within the Israeli context, immigration, even of people who are not recognized as Jews, is under the law of return, which is a very Zionist law. It's part of, the very basic foundation of what Israel stands for in terms of a particular Jewish immigration policy. It sees itself as a homeland for all kinds of Jews. Many of the people who arrived here are part of intermarried families from the former Soviet Russian Union. So it means that those people has some kind of biographical connection with Jews. Some of these people actually who came from the former Soviet Union and have not been recognized as Jews in Israel suffered there as Jews, because there the matrilineal descendants is not overriding, but actually the patrilineal. So many of them have been regarded by others and by themselves as Jews. So they have suffered to some extent as Jews. So accepting them and making Israel a full home for them is part of a Zionist script. So I think this is part of the more local context, besides the equivalence to other secular states who do handle in this way or another the religious affiliation of its citizens.
More specific to your work inside this field, I think there are four general themes, or at least in my reading, there were four general themes that come to the fore in the book. The anthropology of the state, the biopolitics of conversion, the dramaturgical aspects of conversion, and lastly, as the title of the very title of the book suggests, the concept of winking, or the way that winking plays into this whole field. So maybe we can just discuss each of these themes in detail. So let's start with the first, the anthropology of the state. Can you explain what you mean by this idea, by this term?
This is an emerging subfield within anthropology. It started to emerge in the 1990s. It has become a huge subfield, really one of the buzzwords within anthropology. It means that anthropologists claim the opportunity to study the state from below and from within and with the help of ethnographic perspectives and tools, that anthropology and not only sociology and not only political philosophy or political science can claim to know how actors within the state and actors working in the name of the state and living under the regime of the state experience their daily life, their daily encounters as being part, like when they try to make sense of their own life and of their identities, the state is always there. The state is above. They meet the state when they go to any bureaucratic office. They meet the state in most rituals, public rituals. The state is over there. And if we attend to this kind of omnipotent presence of the states, of the state with ethnographic tools, the assumption is that we can gain a very profound, deep look into how the state is enacted, experienced, and reproduced, actually, in everyday life. And this is what I was trying to do. I didn't plan to do ethnographic study of the state. I just wanted to study conversion. And I even had, in my mind, thought about education and the essentialist vision of what Jewish identity is all about. But the state was just there, and I couldn't ignore it. Yes. It was there when converts were speaking in fear about the bureaucrats in the rabbinical establishment that they need to meet. The state was there when I met converts who went to an exceptional committee because they were not citizens, and they asked to undergo conversion when they were, in fact, tourists or they held, like, temporary resident visa. So the state was there, part of their everyday negotiation of what does it mean to convert. The state was there for them when they, for example, did not think of themselves as Jewish subjects or as religious Jews or as potentially religious Jews. They didn't want to become religion, but they did want the state to acknowledge their belonging within the state. They did want to show the state its care and love and participation. So the state was just there.
So this is a wonderful explication of how the most private, the most individual, really, in terms of the conversion process, the very body becomes political in the highest level, the level of the state. I think this touches upon the second theme, which is probably the most pressing aspect of your subject matter, which is captured under the term biopolitics. Can you first explain to the uninitiated listener what the term, how the term usually is used, and then discuss maybe how it plays into religious conversion in Israel?
The term has proliferated for about, I think, 2-3 decades, mainly following Michel Foucault. And what he meant by biopolitics is not necessarily what I or others have meant. So I will explain some of what I take out of this concept and how I use it. Biopolitics means that the most biopolitical and personal issues of life course, of biopolitical functions of individuals, is politically useful for any kind of political authority. It can be the state, but not necessarily. And any kind of political form know how to use those seemingly private eras of like personal domains in one's life in order to make the bigger political domain working better. Like, for example, fertility is a domain where many have worked with the concept of biopolitics in mind, where the state, for example, can endorse a population policy pro-natalist or against natalist, with the image of how many people they want the state to have. So bigger, broader demographic goals actually underwrite how people have to live their lives and plan their own life. And I use it sort of counterintuitively because I don't talk about only the body. I'm talking about religious conversion, which is a mental process. It's a political process. I think that it does differ from fertility. At the same time, I'm talking about how state agents, both Zionist, secular, and religious, find the convert as a useful body for the state's goals. So making as many converts as possible is better for the state politically, demographically, socially, family-wise. So they apply all this, apply the power of the state and in the name of the state in order to make as many Jews as possible. And this is why they apply it mostly to younger women, because they want these women to become Jewish mothers and to be able to join the country and produce and reproduce for the country demographically. So there is something very useful politically about conversion. And I think it is the most pressing, as you just said, or maybe controversial, because religious figures tend to present religious conversion as something that works for the individual, for his or her own sake. It's a very individual process. She has to undergo a personal process of thinking about her life and be reflective about it and conduct religious rituals. But it's not only personal.
I think, again, for the uninitiated listener, there's a point to be stressed here. From the religious point of view, or the Orthodox interpretation of Jewish halakha point of view, this is indeed a private matter that obviously bears on national considerations, but is first and foremost a private matter. The state has made it a national mission because the state's logic makes it political and collective. I think the conflation of these two aspects is what creates the field where this amazing act that you clearly analyze come to play. And this, I guess, has to do with a third theme, which is what you term as the dramaturgy of conversion. What do you mean by this term?
So here I apply the well-known sociological rhetoric or vocabulary of Erwin Goffman, a well-known American sociologist who has been suggested a while ago that everyday life is enacted as a kind of rehearsals or performance between individuals, players, actors, and audiences. He tried to transcend the binary between false presentation and real presentation, and he was trying to show us how in everyday life we are all actors and we are all playing, which does not mean that we are lying or that we are insincere, but that we are all the time well aware that we are in front of our audiences. So I'm applying this vocabulary, this dramaturgical vocabulary, for two reasons. One is for emic reasons, which means that inductively, when I entered the field, the vocabulary that I listened to was so dramaturgical. I heard people speaking about acts and actors and performances. Don't make this an act. Don't make it a performance. When rabbinical judges will be concerned and suspicious if a performance is not sincere or real, they would say, is this only a performance? So I, as an ethnographer that was trying to attend well to the vocabulary of, you know, the people I was studying, so I couldn't ignore this kind of dramaturgical imagination. And I couldn't ignore that what they meant was kind of binary terms that Goffman has been trying to transcend, because they did mean it to be a false performance. Performance was meant to say a false performance, an empty one. At the same time, I've been doing my field work for 3 years. So during this time, I could not ignore the fact that what I saw was dramaturgical processes that were counter to the kind of vocabulary employed in my field. While they have been speaking about performance as a lie or as an act of impostures, insincere impostures, they have been all conducting performances, intersecting performances, and well coordinating performances. They have not been harmonized, but they have been, they had many contradictions, but they have been coordinated. And what I could not ignore is that conversion agents, because they have had the biopolitical logics in their mind and they have been walking in the name of this kind of logic, they taught their converts how to behave and how to perform sincerity, how to perform a sufficiently good enough convert, a convert that his or her performance can be endorsed and can be accumulated later in the state's demography, right? They have been aggregated. And so there have been two conflating meanings of dramaturgy in my field, and they have been walking simultaneously. So I needed to attend to both of them and to their implications.
Was this education of how to perform also extended to how to perform correctly as a Jew post-conversion? Again, I'm talking about the performance, not as the observance.
Not really, no, not really. They did have aspirations, pedagogic aspiration, that these converts will go out of the ritual mikveh, ritual bath, and will join a religious community or retain some Orthodox maintenance life. At the same time, they knew that those converts would probably won't adhere to Orthodox life afterwards. So what they cared mostly about is that at the moment when someone's conversion has been endorsed, at this very moment, he's performing a good enough convert, a sustainable convert, one that whose performance can render the bureaucrats as good enough bureaucrats. Because if a rabbi would endorse an empty shell, an empty performance, it means that he lets the national mission overrule or make priority over religious commitments. So in order to kosherize, to make the national mission kosher, and in order to kosherize the label, the actual work of each rabbi or each bureaucrat, the converts needed to play the good enough convert.
So now we have to stress what is implicit in this whole discussion, almost taken as a given in the Israeli context, that the performance that these converts are expected to carry is dictated by an Orthodox interpretation of Jewish law. And this is because the Israeli state endowed the Orthodox rabbinical with the monopoly over the system.
Very much so, right.
So in a sense, they are compelled to perform an imitation of a lifestyle that only a minority of Israeli Jews adhere to or observe in daily life. Only roughly 20% of Israeli Jews identify as religious or Orthodox. Well, the number changes, but the funny fact or the fun fact around this whole process is that a majority of Jews who do not observe Orthodox Jewish law requiring those non-Jews to perform as if they are going to now observe it in order for them to be part of the collective.
Right. And this kind of irony implicated in the relationship that I had developed with some of the converts. They were envy at me or even angry at me that I can be there as a secular Jew and I don't have to prove anything to anyone and I can still claim my Jewishness. With no apologetic and no need to any bureaucratic stamp to prove me. And yet they, who felt not less Jewish than I do, needed to prove to authorities that they deserve to be included within the national fold, right?
Yes,
I wanted to mention that many of the ironies and the complications within the performance of the national mission has been also been clear to the converts. They actually knew that their teachers, their rabbis, their bureaucrats care much more for Israel's demography, for Israel's solidarity, for Israel's national mission than they cared for their own personal religious conduct. They knew that these people walk in the name of the national mission. And because of that, they are willing to compromise the convert's sincerity or the convert's full performance. So they knew that the conversion agents cannot speak fully or explicitly about what they really care about, which is you know, the state of Israel, keeping it Jewish face, keeping it Jewish dynamic, keeping it Jewish Orthodox style. And all those conversion agents needed to perform in front of the converts, which who have been their audiences, that they have been really working for pedagogic reasons, that they have been working under religious sincerity themselves. So it's mixed or mutual performance.
I see, and this touches upon directly. This touches directly upon, I'm sorry, the title of your book, and the notion of winking. You offer a very Goffman-esque analysis of this notion, of this act, of this wink. Can you explain again to our listeners what you mean by winking and why does it play such an important role in the field of religious conversion in Israel?
When I'm speaking about winking, I'm drawing on both Goffmanian perspective, but also on Geertzian, Clifford Geertz, who is a paramount anthropologist, cultural anthropologist. And I'm also drawing on the nativist or the indigenous language of the people I've been working with. I will explain. I've heard many people in the field speaking about wink-wink relations. I've read and heard many people present conversion as only a wink-wink thing. Those converts are only lying to us, the conversion agents, and the conversion agents are being blamed to winkfully invite empty performances from the converts. So when you read newspaper and when you read how the conversion national mission is represented, you would always encounter the idea of winking. And in a way that suspect both the converts and the conversion agents as liars. But I think that the winking actually allows us to think in ways that transcend the binary terms of lying or real performance. They do wink, which means that both converts and conversion agents wink at each other. They make very nuanced gestures at each other to make this kind of shared, collaborated performance work out. This is so nuanced and so thin as wink is. So I think they do wink, but in a way that doesn't necessarily imply that these converts are lying. Some of them do. Some of them do lie. Some of them would say to me, I've been lying. But most of them feel that even if they did not tell the whole truth, they did not lie, they performed something new. And just one extra layer about this winking, I've been also playing in my book with the idea of wink-wink and win-win. Because this is a collaborative initiative project, there is an aspect of win-win, of like mutually beneficial conversion. And to add just one last layer, so much in the anthropology of the state has been governed by thinking about seeing, about gazes, that the state gazes upon citizens. And its power is exercised by seeing its citizens. And I want to shift the conversation to winking. It's not only about seeing and about exercising power. It's also about collaborations and having real nuanced relations between state institutions and agents to citizens.
Yes, and I think as Geertz notes about winking, what is so fascinating about the act is that we're it's not based upon an already agreed set of interpretations, agreed interpretations, it would make no sense. And I think what's the lively and highly interesting political aspect of the conversion process is exactly what is hidden or what is assumed to be understood, but never explicitly mentioned by the wink. I mean, it comes also in what you say. I think there's one big issue, I mean, one big word that doesn't come up in the discussion, which is actually the, in a sense, the infrastructure of it, is the Jew versus the Arab. The whole notion of keeping a minority of Arabs versus a majority of Jews is lying at the basis, but never mentioned. It is never mentioned because it's only winked at, which is so nuanced, as you note. And in this regard, I think your work makes it very clear that religious Zionism holds a unique role in the field of conversions. Can you explain why this is so? What is the role they are holding, and why are they such a central actor in this field?
Religious Zionists, those that I met and those that I read writing about conversion, feel mobilized to take the heavy load of the national mission. They feel compelled ideologically to work in the name of the state. They feel that if they hadn't have taken the responsibility, no one else would have done it and no one else would do it. The ultra-Orthodox, they claim, and I agree, wouldn't do it because they are confined to only religious or halachic Jewish law terms. They think and act only within the prism of Jewish law. And the religious Zionist actors or the religious Zionist sector in general claim to hold and live together with two political inclinations. One is the commitment to Zionism, and the other is the commitment and the state, and the other is the commitment to Jewish life and Jewish law. So only they who care enough about the Jewish population, this is the biopolitical, right? About the Jewish population and about the Jewish state and its sacred role within the Zionist scheme can work so hard, they would claim, they would work so hard to actualize the state's national mission. Ultra-Orthodox just won't care, and the secular Zionists would care, but they won't do it through religious law. So they really have to bear the sort of like heavy mission, and it is heavy. And in my ethnographic work, I try to document those moments where this heaviness is experienced and felt. So what would do a religious Zionist teacher who feels obligated to the national mission and sees himself as a soldier of the national mission when he encounters lies or insincerity, or when he understands that his students really want to be Jewish, but they really don't want to be religious? So he has to juggle between these two contradictory schemes and commitments.
So as you noted at the beginning of our conversation, this is primarily a Zionist story, because were it not for the Zionist framework, this whole dilemma would not even existed. This whole understanding of the Jew preceding Judaism to make Orthodoxy or the Orthodox point of view of Judaism a marginal view is only tenable in the context of Zionism. Yet, and correct me if I'm wrong here, the Zionist ideology and Israel as an embodiment of it, they do not offer a way into the Jewish collective that would be an alternative to religious conversion, or do they?
Well, religious conversion is a very broad term. Reform Jews would tell you that what they do is also a religious conversion, right? And conservative denomination as well. There have been once a marginal suggestion by Yossi Begin for a secular conversion. And there are several suggestions to actualize a more liberal Orthodox conversion. So outside of the purview of the state and underneath it, and sort of like subversive to it, there have been some religious Zionist figures, prominent figures, who try to ease the conversion demands. So they are not acknowledged as state institutions or a state conversion, but they have been trying to apply. And there is also one alternative route suggested by a Tzohar rabbi who tried to speak about conversion to Israeliness, like taken the assimilation of non-Jewish former immigrants within Israeli society. The claim is that in any way we are all sort of Israelis, and the Jewish aspect is not necessarily so prominent in terms of religion. So, but those alternatives have been marginalized, they have not been endorsed. And although the national mission is a real disaster in terms of numbers, in terms of achievement of the goals, the demographic goals. It's a real fiasco. It's a real crisis, failure. And yet the alternative routes have not been accepted.
Yes, and it's interesting to know that even these alternative routes are also considered in terms of conversion, still, I guess, bound by the notion of counting Jews versus non-Jews as the foundation of the political setting for Israel.
Right, right. In the same way, in opposite, maybe not in opposite, but in difference to, for example, American Jewry. In American Jewry, where most Jews are not affiliated, and those who are affiliated are affiliate with Reform or Conservative Jews, there are more and more voices saying that conversion as a formal process is not necessary. What matters for the, you know, life of the real communities in everyday life is that non-Jewish spouses will join the Jewish spouse, that they will decide as a family to send the children to Jewish education, that they will decide to be a contributing member of the community. So the counting has a different implication and sensibilities. So because what counts is that the community will have enough members, right? So it works differently.
So, and it goes back to the idea that the national mission comes to address a national predicament in a sense, and it's only a predicament if you view it as a predicament. This is what the American Jewish Alternative shows us, that there are other ways of considering the presence of a large minority of non-Jews, which wouldn't necessarily be viewed as a threat to the very political infrastructure of the state.
Within American Jewry, American Jewish context, people do look at the intermarriage issue as a predicament. There is no doubt about it. And they try to govern it in their own, by the way, biopolitical way. But within Israel, you mentioned rightly so that unless it is constructed as a predicament, as a problem, there is nothing to target, right? There's nothing to address. And they do construct it as a problem by discursively speaking about emergency, about numbers. They have their own discursive ways to construct it as a problem, something that really deserves the money and attention of this.
Well, Michal, we really have taken too much of your time. Can you tell me, tell us maybe in closing what project or projects you are currently working on?
So I've been working on two projects. One is actually about American Jewry. this is why I've been kept taking you there. And it's about counting American Jews, how American Jews counting their members and how they try to reproduce their like Americans as Jews. And the other project is about anti-sexual abuse activism that has been emerging in the ultra-Orthodox community, both in Israel and the States. It has taken many forms of grassroots organizations and legal advocacy and sort of psychotherapies and psychotherapeutic discourse, and have been following those activists and therapists and community leaders trying to bring the issue on the table.
Wow, both projects sound so much interesting. Thank you, Professor Krava El-Tovi, for being on the show, and wishing you all the best.
Thank you so much for having me.